From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, a wiretapped phone call, Russian diplomats, fear of blackmail, a loose-lipped army general, and a White House in crisis. From fateful call to resignation, the 47-day fall of Donald Trump's national security advisor, Michael Flynn. We tell the whole story. It's Wednesday, February 15th. In early December, after Donald Trump's election but before his inauguration, Washington is reeling because what has been rumor for months is now being confirmed by American intelligence agencies.
This just into CNN, Russian hackers managed to infiltrate the computer network at the Democratic National Committee.
And the United States formally charged that Russia organized the hacking of Democratic political sites and state election systems.
The cyber attack on the Democratic National Committee and the email account of Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman was authorized by the Russian government. It's what federal officials are calling an extraordinary effort to influence the outcome of an American presidential election. The growing consensus is that Russia chose sides in that election, and they chose Trump, now the president-elect. President Obama, in the final days of his administration, is under pressure to respond more forcefully to those attacks and is drawing up a plan to retaliate against Russia.
Our goal continues to be to send a clear message to Russia not to do this to us, because we can do stuff to you.
Amid all this, two men get on the phone. One from the United States, one from Russia.
The man from the United States is Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, a retired military officer who is at this moment a private citizen, but within weeks will become the national security advisor for Donald Trump. The Russian is the Russian ambassador to the United States, Sergei I. Kislyak.
Matthew Rosenberg is a national security reporter in Washington. He's been documenting this complicated series of events and has known Michael Flynn for years.
Flynn's this working class kid from Rhode Island. He goes to University of Rhode Island, he does ROTC, gets into the military, and he rises through the ranks. He's an intelligence officer, and his star really begins to shine during the war in Iraq, where he's working for General Stanley McChrystal, and they're dismantling Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And Flynn kind of gains this reputation as having this amazing knack for kind of mapping out terrorist networks and dismantling them. And it's here that Flynn kind of becomes this kind of bigger-than-life figure. He writes an entire report publicly criticizing how intelligence is collected and how it serves the war effort, really solidifies his reputation as this kind of brash, unconventional officer who's willing to buck the trend and tell the bureaucracy they're wrong. When he gets to Washington, suddenly finds out he's under investigation because among his unconventional way of doing business was he tried to share intel with the Pakistanis about some Taliban terror networks.
Wow.
And his thinking there, which was kind of classic Flynn and somewhat McChrystal, was we want to get the Pakistanis to help us, so we're going to try and like shame them a little bit into doing this. We're going to tell them we know what they're up to and that they're helping these guys. But that was like CIA intelligence. They were pretty pissed about that.
All right, back to this call. Why is Michael Flynn having this conversation in December?
So look, the Trump campaign is just one. Flynn is going to be their national security advisor. He's going to be a point person on foreign affairs, defense, stuff like that. So he's part of the effort that any administration makes in a transition to reach out to allies, adversaries, kind of leaders and officials around the world and start establishing a relationship.
So this conversation goes from a typical courtesy call into a discussion of policy. What
yes.
policy specifically gets discussed?
They begin to talk about sanctions. Now, the Obama administration at that point was, I think, a day away from imposing sanctions over the Russian election hacking. And that, you know, it was kind of an open secret that it was coming. What we've been told is that the message Flynn delivered was pretty unambiguous. It was subtle, but pretty clear, which was that, look, anything that's happening, any sanctions that are coming, don't react, don't overreact. The Obama administration is Russia's problem, not the United States. When Trump is in office, there will be many avenues for cooperation, so let's not mess anything up right now.
So then these sanctions come. How does Russia react?
It doesn't. I mean, it really just brushed them off. And Trump also gets on Twitter saying, you know, Putin's really smart for not rising to the bait here. It's an amazing kind of confluence of coincidences. You know, we can't connect all these dots here right now, but it does not look great.
So the implication here very much seems to be that the muted response from Russia was maybe in part or even more because of Flynn and people like him. What's technically wrong with that?
You know, it's legally, there's nothing wrong with it, you know, but it's really, really untoward to get on the phone with an adversary and say that the current president of the United States, to whom we're all supposed to be loyal, and Flynn certainly is at that point, is wrong, and just ignore them, and to really undercut the actual government of the United States at that moment. That's considered an incredible breach of protocol in Washington, and with good reason. You know, if you had a 3-month transition where you had two different camps kind of trying to make policy and telling foreign adversaries or allies how things are going to be, you couldn't run the country that way. Every 4 years, you'd have this great giant hole. And, you know, and I think a lot of Americans would find it pretty unseemly to get on the phone with a country like Russia that's just accused of trying to help win the election. And you're on the phone saying, hey, we're going to be friends with you too. Don't worry about the current people.
So this call is being recorded. Why is the call being recorded, and by whom is it being recorded?
So it's the FBI listening. The FBI has probably been listening to the Russian ambassador's phone call since, what, like 1942 or the 30s?
Right.
I mean, they've been listening to these phone calls for a long time. So they picked this all up. I think their initial concern was that the classified information was discussed. They do at some point assess that, like, nobody broke any laws here discussing classified information. But he did get on the phone and say, look, talk policy, talk about sanctions, and undercut current American policy with the Russian ambassador.
Well, who else might be eavesdropping on this call as well?
I mean, well, the Russians certainly were. They were part of it. I mean, let's presume that they know everything about the call because the ambassador can report back exactly what was said. Did they record it? Possibly. I don't know.
We assume they did, but we're not sure.
Yeah, not sure. It was on their cell phones. It's kind of recording on a cell phone is a little bit of a pain in the butt.
Wouldn't someone like Flynn, given his military experience and the fact that he's about to become the national security advisor for the United States, wouldn't he have known that a call like this would be recorded by at least one side?
You'd think. You'd think he would know it was going to be recorded, but he wouldn't be the first in a long list of generals to do things that you'd think they would know better. I mean, look at Dave Petraeus. Not only was he having an affair with his biographer, they were using a Gmail dead drop, you know, as their kind of hidey hole to like exchange information. I mean, that was not exactly cutting edge, and this guy was running the CIA at the time.
I mean, love is blind.
Yes.
Blinding.
Did Flynn love the Russians? I don't know, but he certainly thought they could be good allies.
So once it's recorded, this telephone call, who finds out about the call?
It starts filtering through the FBI. They've got the National Security Advisor on the phone. They need to make sure no classified information is discussed. They're kind of looking at the call to make sure everything's kind of legal. And it does seem unusual, and it starts filtering way up, and it gets to the Department of Justice and keeps kind of moving its way up there. The same time, first, second week of January, news media reports come out.
A bombshell out of Washington today.
That Flynn had this call with the ambassador.
That he discussed U.S. sanctions with a Russian ambassador before President Trump took office.
9 current and former government officials told the Washington Post that National Security Advisor Michael Flynn discussed U.S. sanctions against Russia with Russia's ambassador before taking office.
Now, the Trump campaign is adamant at the time. They say, hey, nothing to look at here.
What I can confirm, having spoken to him about it, is that those conversations that happened to occur around the time that the United States took action to expel diplomats had nothing whatsoever to do with those sanctions.
And internally, that's apparently what Flynn had told people. Mike Pence had asked him about it, and that's what he was told. You know, I think that's where Flynn starts getting into real trouble. To that point, he's now lied to people, and the Russians know the truth.
We'll be right back. A week or two has now passed since the phone call has come to the attention of the media. Donald Trump has been sworn in as president, and Michael Flynn is now officially his national security advisor.
So once the Trump team is in office, you know, after the inauguration, the Department of Justice, kind of senior people come to Trump people and say, look, we've got a transcript. Flynn has misled at least some people in this White House, including the vice president. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And that's kind of like blackmail 101. Like, if you have a big secret and a foreign power can find out about it, you don't get a clearance because you're suddenly a blackmail risk.
When we say blackmail, what exactly do we mean?
You know, so here's the thing. First of all, it was a risk. There's no evidence that anybody was blackmailed. But say you're Russia, you've got to see, you know Mike Flynn doesn't want this secret out. This is like, I think, what the investigators would imagine. This is the potential they're thinking of. You go to him and say, hey, I want to know about, you know, what you guys are thinking on issue X. What are you guys going to do about Ukraine? And if you don't tell us, hey, you know, we'll expose your secret. You know, that could get you fired. That could kind of destroy your professional life. And that's a pretty big thing to hold over somebody.
Permanent leverage that they would hold over him.
Exactly.
To derive either advantage or to extract information.
Yep.
So the Department of Justice sounds like it's warning the White House, you may have a blackmail problem you don't even know about.
Yep. Or you've got some kind of risk there. And this is a guy who has clearance to everything. You know, the way top secret clearances work in the U.S., they're called compartmentalized. Everything's on a need-to-know basis. So say you and I both have clearances. I do drones. You do wiretapping. I can't see the wiretapping stuff. You can't see the drone stuff. Flynn, he can see everything. He can see whatever he wants. He sees the presidential daily brief. I mean, he's got the crown jewels there. So this is the kind of thing that the Justice Department is, you know, they should be concerned about.
And the White House response at that moment when the Department of Justice is telling them about this vulnerability to blackmail from our biggest, one of our biggest adversaries, Russia, is what? How do they react internally?
It's hard to tell. I mean, right now they're saying they were looking at stuff, but it seemed to have just shrugged it off. Flynn kept going. He kept just working, and it seemed like business as usual.
So on Monday night, of course, Flynn finally does step down. And on Tuesday,
I want to address the events of last night first and foremost.
The White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer says,
as Charles Krauthammer said last night, it is, quote, perfectly reasonable for him to do so.
It's not unusual for Flynn to be doing something like this, to be having a call like this.
In fact, he spoke with over 30 of his counterparts throughout the transition.
What's unusual, Spicer said, is that he misled the president. And the president, for his part, says it's not what Flynn did. It's that it was leaked.
I mean, there are so many issues with those statements. I'm going to start with Spicer's statement. Yes, he's right. It's not unusual for Flynn to be talking to the Russian ambassador. It is unusual for them to be talking about current policy and for Flynn to be undercutting it. That is a highly unusual thing. So I just want to get that out of the way. I think Trump's tweet, you know, says a lot about how he views the situation, that the problem really isn't Flynn. It's the leaks. It's the news. It's the public perception of it. It's that I have to read stories about it and have to hear about it. And if all the news media would just stop reporting on it, this wouldn't be an issue and Flynn would still have his job.
Okay, so that explains Spicer and Trump. What's the actual problem here in your mind that forced him out of the White House?
It looks like the perception issue is the problem. You know, there's a whole issue with Trump and Russia and the connections there. There is FBI investigations into a number of people who were close to Trump, including his former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. And suddenly you've got Flynn is becoming a lightning rod for this. People are talking Flynn, Russia, Flynn, Russia. And Flynn has had this real pro-Russia bent where he sees Russia as this natural ally of the United States in the war against Islamist extremism and that we should be working closely with Russia. And he's had this growing relationship with Russia since he left the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was a guest at RT, the Russian network that the American intelligence community considers a propaganda outlet.
The former director of the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, Michael Flynn, now joining us live here on RT International. Michael, thank you.
This is a television network.
Yeah,
in Russia.
Yeah.
When we play this sort of bully game against each other between the United States and Russia, that's going to achieve nothing. I mean, it's going to achieve actually more conflict.
He did a paid speaking engagement on behalf of RT in 2015 and went to their anniversary party in Moscow. And at the dinner, he sat next to Vladimir Putin. The pictures are everywhere. And so there's a real appearance issue here of Flynn being way too close to a country that everyone from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to the director of the CIA considers America's probably biggest potential existential threat in the world. And now every day, Flynn's now become the focus of this for the White House. He is a total distraction. And that seems to be why he went, not because he had the call or not because he misled anyone about it.
But because he very badly advances a storyline that the Trump White House does not like, maybe can't tolerate.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a weird White House. Trump's making the decisions here and nobody seems to know what he's thinking half the time. So they all seem to be speaking to him through us sometimes. And through the media. So
right.
you get Kellyanne at 4:07.
Does the national security advisor right now enjoy the full confidence of President Trump?
Saying Flynn's got the full confidence.
Yes, General Flynn does enjoy the full confidence of the president. And this is a big week for General Flynn. He's
like an hour later, Spicer's talking about, you know, well, it's under evaluation. And then by 11 p.m., he's out. I mean, that's a pretty, talk about a quick decline. In fact, he was out so quickly that both me and another colleague got notes from friends of ours at the National Security Council who said they didn't see any resignation. They found out about it from the Times. They weren't even told internally. It's pretty amazing, though. I mean, you had a national security advisor for 25 days. I mean, that's pretty short for anyone, I guess.
Matthew, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
The New York Times is reporting that President Trump was told more than 2 weeks ago that Flynn had not told the truth about his interactions with the Russian ambassador. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer says the president had been reviewing the situation during that time and ultimately decided that Flynn must resign. Flynn will be replaced by 72-year-old retired General Keith Kellogg, a decorated veteran of the Vietnam War. Here's what else you need to know today. Michael Flynn's problems are moving from the White House over to Congress. Republican Senator Roy Blunt is calling for an exhaustive investigation into the Trump administration's connections to Russia.
I would think we should talk to General Flynn very soon, and that should answer a lot of questions. What did he know? What did he do? And is there any reason to believe that anybody else knew that and didn't take the kind of action they should have taken?
The Times is reporting that the FBI interviewed Flynn about the call in late January. That raises the stakes of the scandal. If Flynn wasn't entirely honest with the FBI, it could expose him to a felony charge. In non-Flynn news, an influential group of American scientists is supporting an idea that's been ethically unacceptable for years: genetically engineering human embryos, but only to avoid babies being born with serious disease or disability. And finally, in New York, the 40-year-old murder case of Eitan Peetz, the first missing child to be shown on a milk carton, has been solved.
The Peetz family has waited a long time, but we finally have found some measure of justice for our wonderful little boy, Eitan.
In 1979, when he was 6 years old, Peetz disappeared while walking to the school bus on his own for the first time. A longtime suspect who worked at a downtown convenience store on Peetz's way to that bus stop was convicted of murder and kidnapping on Tuesday.
I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful that this jury finally came back with what I have known for a long time, that this man, Pedro Hernandez, is guilty of doing something really terrible so many years ago.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.